Patients are smart. They know the right thing to do. They just need to have a good explanation so they can understand why to do it. It's not always medication. You know, lifestyle plays a key role. And if we can institute, you know, good lifestyle earlier in life, then that's the best recipe to be healthy as you get older.
This is True to Your Heart. Lessons on living a healthy, hearty life. Brought to you by Amarin.
Welcome to True to Your Heart, where we discuss new ways of looking at your cardiovascular health with leading health and wellness experts. Today, we touch on the impact that the pandemic has had on cardiovascular health in our country and ways to make our health a priority once again. Later, we'll touch on how your diet plays a big part in doing just that. Our first guest, Dr. Dean Corrales, is an expert in the field of cardiology and lipidology. Through his career, Dr. Corrales has conducted over 30 clinical trials in cardiology, with many focusing on lowering cholesterol. Not only has he been a guest lecturer on a wide variety of subjects related to cardiovascular health, but he has written over 150 articles, book chapters, and abstracts on the subject. He's a member of many professional associations, a clinical professor of medicine at Thomas Jefferson University in Philadelphia. And today, he's going to teach us what we can look for when it comes to managing our cardiovascular health. Welcome, Dr. Corrales. Great to have you on the show. We love having somebody like you on True to Your Heart. Welcome.
Well, Ron, thanks for having me. I appreciate the invitation.
Doc, I tell you, it's been a crazy 14 months as we enter the 14th month of this pandemic. And, you know, people are stuck at home. You know, they're afraid to leave the house, and that has a trickle-down effect on many, many things. But what are the major importances of getting your annual checkup and blood work done during this pandemic period?
Well, it's really important, and this has really been a challenging time, I think, for all of us. But there is a light at the end of the tunnel. More and more people in our area and around the country are getting vaccinated. So there really is a light at the end of the tunnel. But I think one thing that we need to recognize is before the pandemic, cardiovascular disease was the leading cause of death in both men and women in this country. And the sad news is that once we get through this pandemic, cardiovascular disease is again going to become the leading cause of death for both men and women in this country. So the one thing that I tell my patients, and I think it's important for all of us, is we need to take charge of our health. We need to live a healthy lifestyle. We need to try to exercise, eat well, but we need to know and recognize what the risk factors of heart disease are so we can talk to our doctor about how we reduce our risk factors so we don't go on to have a cardiovascular event.
Dr. Corrales, do you find that along the way you may have to convince people, hey, it's okay to go to the doctor's office. It's okay to go to the health clinics and health centers. Are there people that are against leaving the house or against visiting the office?
Yeah, I think early on that may have been. I think that's less of an issue now. I think probably one of the safest places you can be right now is in a doctor's office. I mean, we take great care in making sure that we have social distancing. We're all wearing masks. We're cleaning and the rooms to make it appropriate. So it's really a safe place. But don't be afraid to come to the doctor and get checked out. I mean, we know that we can prevent many cardiovascular events if we can identify those risk factors early and then treat those risk factors. And it's really pretty simple. I mean, cigarette smoking is a major risk factor for heart disease, so don't smoke. High blood pressure, high cholesterol, and diabetes. And when we talk about high cholesterol, it's not just bad LDL cholesterol, but it's also triglycerides that increase the cardiovascular risk. You know, it's a beautiful day, and you were mentioning earlier that maybe we need to be out on the golf course. People know their golf score. People know their social security number, they know their bank number, but they don't know what their cholesterol value is. They don't know what their blood pressure is when they leave a doctor's office. And people need to know that so that they can act on it and improve those risk factors and lower their risk of having a heart attack or a stroke.
Yeah, Doc, I'll ask you a personal question. You know, I have a blood test monitor and I take my own blood pressure every single day.
Right.
How important is that people monitor their blood pressure on a regular or even daily basis?
It is really important. And we know, unfortunately, that many people who go on to have high blood pressure and have a heart event or a stroke, didn't recognize that they had high blood pressure or wasn't well treated. And sometimes, you know, you can be anxious when you come to a doctor's office and your blood pressure may be high.
Yep.
Your home blood pressure is really important. And in fact, the new guidelines from the American Heart Association, the American College of Cardiology, really try to emphasize monitoring your blood pressure at home. And they're inexpensive now. So, you know, most people can afford and get a home blood pressure monitor, monitor it periodically, and know what the right number is. Ideally, your blood pressure should be less than 130 for the top and less than 80 for the bottom number. Maybe a little bit higher if you're older, but if your blood pressure is high, 140 over 90 or much higher, that should be a red flag that you need to call your doctor and follow up closely. And the same thing, know your cholesterol values. You know what a normal cholesterol is, what a normal triglyceride level is. And if yours is high, talk to your doctor about, you know, how can I reduce my risk? How can I lower my cholesterol? And it doesn't always mean medication. Lifestyle changes with good diet, with weight loss and exercise can go a long way in order to lower cholesterol, lower blood pressure, and lower blood sugar and prevent you developing diabetes or hypertension or cholesterol that requires medication down the road.
Dr. Kralis, there are a lot of people that, you know, are on medication. You know, they should take them regularly. What happens if they're feeling fine and say, oh, hey, I'm feeling good. My blood pressure's under control. I don't need my meds anymore. What's your advice to those people?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, the problem is that high blood pressure doesn't cause symptoms until you have a heart attack or a stroke. There are no symptoms from high cholesterol. High cholesterol clogs your heart arteries and causes a heart attack or stroke. So you need to stay on these medications long term. And if you think you're having side effects, you know, talk to your doctor because there are different medications that you can try to get things under control. But the other point that I also want to make, and we talked about risk factors, is know your family history, because we know genetics as well as environment play a key role in what your risk is of heart disease and stroke. So if you have a family member, especially if it's first degree, a mother, a father, a brother, or sister, that have developed heart disease or a stroke early in life, you may have some genetic susceptibility to also have the same problem. And acting on those risk factors early can prevent you from following down the same road as your family members did.
You know, Dr. Kralis, obviously, you know, you're as good as it gets when it comes to giving advice. And the advice you're giving us so far has been just fantastic. But where do you differentiate between people managing their own health, taking your advice, and bundling it together, what you have to say, and then taking it and run with it? You know, how do you get people to ease back into managing their own health using your advice or their own doctor's advice?
I think this needs to be a partnership between the patient and between the clinician or the physician. You know, this can't really be that you come into the doctor's office and the doctor sort of, you know, delegates this advice and tells you what to do. It needs to be a long, an open conversation so that the individual understands what the risk is, why you're talking about treating, and what the options are. And it has to be kind of give and take. You know, the patient needs to listen to the doctor, but the doctor also needs to listen to the patient. And it needs to be this back and forth conversation so that there can be clear communication and understanding. And I think if you do that and spend time talking to the patient, educating them, I mean, patients are smart. They know the right thing to do. They just need to have a good explanation so they can understand why to do it. And again, it's not always medication. You know, lifestyle plays a key role. And if we can institute, you know, good lifestyle earlier in life, then that's the best recipe to be healthy as you get older.
Yeah, I think lifestyle, you touched upon, you know, I think of myself as a professional athlete for 17 years. And every day was important to exercise, stay in shape, run, lift, do all the things that were necessary to keep your job. And as you get older, you kind of get away from that. As I said earlier in the show, you know, good day to golf. Maybe we should be out on the golf course, say, getting the exercise. But how important, as you progress in life, is that daily exercise? And what do you recommend as people move on and get older?
It's important to stay healthy, you know, and you know, one of the issues that we're dealing with in this country now is the epidemic of obesity, especially in children and young adults. So, you know, we need to start early and we need to have good habits with lifestyle early in life. And then that translates into following sort of good habits as you get older. But it's important to exercise as you get older, not only to reduce blood pressure and blood sugar and cholesterol, but also to maintain muscle strength as we get older, especially with women with osteoporosis and the risk of falls and maintaining good balance. But it doesn't need to be real vigorous exercise. I mean, just get out and walk, you know, just, you know, about 120 minutes a week, which is not a lot of just walking, getting out, doing some light weights, some stretching. I mean, those are the best things. And if you're busy and you can't fit it in all at once, do 5 or 10 minutes here, 5 or 10 minutes here. As I tell my patients, if you drive your car, park at the back of the parking lot and walk a little bit. Mm-hmm. Walk around the block a little bit. If you take public transportation and it's safe, get off at a stop earlier, a stop later, and take a walk as long as the weather's nice. But just try to be active and then eat a heart-healthy lifestyle. We got to reduce carbs. We got to reduce sugars and saturated fats. And we kind of all know what to do. The matter is sort of putting our mind to it in order to be able to do it. But the long run is a healthy lifestyle and feeling healthy, both mentally and physically, as we get older.
I'm kind of surprised by the number you just threw out there that, you know, get 120 minutes in a week. You know, that should be fairly simple for most people, shouldn't it?
It should be. But unfortunately, you know, we become fairly sedentary. But just, yep, you know, try to get out. Every little bit counts. And even moderate exercise in an older person goes a long way to reduce cardiovascular risk and keep you healthy.
What are a few of the preventive measures or things that we should all look out for when we're at a higher risk level, whether you're, you know, high risk from a previous health event, condition, or it's just hereditary, as you mentioned earlier? What are some preventive measures we have to look out for?
Well, the first thing, as I said, is know what your risk factors are. So the first thing is know your family history. This may be surprising, is that if you look at people who go on and are admitted to the hospital with a heart attack, most of them have had high cholesterol or risk factors that were never addressed until after they've had their heart attack. So you want to prevent the heart attack by addressing the risk factors first. So key number one is know your family history. If you have a strong family history, if your father had a heart attack in his 40s or 50s, and you're in your 30s and 40s, you need to go to your doctor and say, you know what, I'm concerned about my family history. What are my risk factors and what can I do to reduce my risk of having a heart attack when I reach that age? So if you have a family history, talk to your doctor about making sure you get screened for your blood pressure, your cholesterol, and your blood sugar, and then don't smoke. Now, when we talk about cholesterol, you know, people talk about good cholesterol and bad cholesterol. So the bad cholesterol is the LDL cholesterol. There are some people, and it's more common than we now have recognized, with about 1 in 250 Americans have severe elevations in their cholesterol based on genetics. And most of them don't even know that they're walking around with such high levels of cholesterol. But again, if you have a family history of heart disease or high cholesterol, you should get your cholesterol screened. And the guidelines actually recommend screening when you're a child.
Wow.
So you need to get screened early with your cholesterol. And if you have a very high cholesterol level, you need to be treated no matter what your risk is. But if your cholesterol is a little bit high, maybe you can work with lifestyle, but work with your physician and your doctor in order to try to get the best strategy to lower your cholesterol. But we're also recognizing now that triglycerides, which are the fat in our blood,
yep,
also pose a significant risk for heart disease. So even if your cholesterol is not high, but your triglycerides are high, that's another marker of increased cardiovascular risk. And again, that can be treated well with lifestyle changes, with diet, exercise, and there's also medications now, if needed, which are safe, which are effective, and reduce the risk of heart attack and stroke.
How often should you be tested or have your cholesterol tested?
If you're using it as a screening test, as probably the age when you're 18 to 20 years old is a screening. If your cholesterol is normal, probably every several years thereafter, unless you've gained weight or there's been some issue. If you're at much higher risk, then probably about once a year should be the right time to check your cholesterol. But again, you know, I ask the viewers who are going to be listening to this, you know, take a step back and say, do I know what my cholesterol value actually is? Do I remember what my blood pressure was when I saw my doctor and what was my last blood sugar? And if you don't have the answers to those questions, you need to get those answers and think about it and talk to your doctor so that you can address those risk factors. If we could address those risk factors early in life, we can prevent that heart attack or stroke that happens when people reach middle age and older age.
You know, I've been reading some reports that there's been a rise in complications that are secondary to poor care. Tell us about the impact COVID-19 has had on individuals who have had chronic health disorders, such as cardiovascular disease. Has it had a huge impact on them?
Yeah, unfortunately, it has for several reasons. One is early on in the pandemic, people were afraid to come into their doctor's office. They were afraid to get blood work done. They weren't getting their blood checked. They weren't getting their cholesterol. They weren't getting their blood pressure. Many were afraid to even go to the pharmacy and get their prescriptions filled. So that really left a gap in care. And my hope is that we've now caught up and we're not going to see the consequences of those gaps in care where we're now seeing more heart events. Now, it's interesting. Some studies in Italy, where Italy was hit hard early in this pandemic, they actually saw a higher risk of heart attacks than they did the year before because people were afraid to come into the hospital with chest pain because they were afraid of getting COVID. So again, I think if people are having symptoms, call your doctor, go to the hospital. Don't be fearful. The hospitals and practices are now safe because of all the care that's being taken to make sure that they're safe and sterile and we've kept good distance. We're getting out of the pandemic and it's time now to focus on our other issues that are still going to be a big issue down the road, which is our risk of heart attack and stroke and cardiovascular events.
Well, Dr. Corrales, I can't thank you enough for taking time out of your busy schedule to enlighten us here on True to Your Heart. I feel a lot better after this discussion. I'm sure our listening audience will enjoy everything you had to say. Thank you so very much.
Well, again, thanks for having me. And everyone, stay safe and stay well.
Joining us now is leading health and nutrition expert, Joy Bauer. Joy is a registered dietitian nutritionist, TV expert, host of her own Amazon Live show, Health, Happiness, and Joy, and best-selling author. She's here today to share with us some of the ways your diet and nutrition can affect your cardiovascular health.
Joy, it's so great to have you on the True to Your Heart podcast. And I watch you so much on NBC, the Today Show. I feel like I know you.
It is so great to be here. And I feel like we're already old friends.
That's the way it should be. You know, we've been dealing with a lot over the last 13 or 14 months with the pandemic. And I guess I would kind of be an example like a lot of people. The pounds have come on a little bit. What do you recommend for people that are normally very active? That activity has kind of been diminished because of the pandemic and not moving around and doing the things we normally do. What do you recommend people do to get back in shape?
Well, I think a lot of people are relating with you right now. I mean, I'm hearing this over and over again, and I totally get it, right? We have been in our house, held captive, like 24/7 for more than a year at this point, and in and out of the kitchen. And I also think that a lot of people are going to continue to be working from home, either part-time or full-time. I mean, now is the time to really sort of crawl out of the black hole and start to take our health and our weight very seriously. The good news is there's a lot of really simple things that people can do. You know, you'll hear over and over again, eat the right foods, a healthy diet, less junk, more produce, and exercise more. But that's like very broad. It's very vague and it's overwhelming. So what I like to do is give small, actionable tips that everybody could start doing. And Ron, I'm telling you, these have huge payback. So for example, everybody should incorporate a produce item into every single meal. I'm talking breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And that's because vegetables and fruits, they're high volume and they're low in calories. So they fill us up without filling us out. But the best part is they are packed with the good stuff. Vitamins, minerals, antioxidants. So they shower our body from head to toe and they enable us to be on the top of our game. And when it comes to heart health, they're super important because they've got fiber, which helps to lower our cholesterol. It could also help to manage our blood pressure and our blood sugar. So it just sort of checks every single box. So with breakfast, if you're having an omelet, throw in some spinach, some chopped tomatoes, onions, mushrooms, anything goes. If you're having a bowl of cereal or oatmeal, add some berries, or you could have a berry yogurt parfait. With lunch, the sky's the limit. I love to do big kitchen sink salads. I tell people, 5 different colored vegetables. That's the ticket. And then if you're having a sandwich, just lift up that top slice of bread and just don't put sad lettuce on there. Pile it up. onion, tomato, roasted peppers, cucumber slices, anything goes. And dinner's relatively easy, right? You could have a stir fry, maybe broccoli and shrimp, or maybe you can do a nice piece of roast salmon and have sauteed spinach on the side. So there's so many options with dinner, but the key really is to incorporate a produce with each and every single meal. And Ron, I'm telling you, the payback from a health perspective and specifically a heart health perspective is pretty gigantic.
Joy, I am so lucky as a husband because my wife pretty much cooks exactly what you just said. She loves to get up in the morning and make breakfast. She loves to cook dinner. She takes great pride in what she presents. It's a healthy lifestyle. But I have one little issue personally. I like dessert and I like to snack. What do you recommend for a dessert and for some snacks? Like late at night, you're watching a movie and you just may want to grab something. Is there something you could say, okay, it's okay, Ron, you can eat this?
Well, you're in luck, Ron, because I have a ferocious sweet tooth. I love sweets too. And, you know, one of the things that I love to do is sort of reimagine some of our most favorite desserts in a healthier way so you don't feel bad about it. And in fact, you feel really good about eating it night after night, because you're showering your body and you're fueling yourself with the right stuff. So for example, I love ice cream. So I figured out a way to make one ingredient ice cream just using frozen bananas. I take regular bananas when they get nice and ripe, because when you start to get those brown speckles on the outside, you know that they're getting super ripe and they're very, very sweet and starchy. And a lot of times people will throw them out and I say, no, don't throw them out. Peel them. Put them in the freezer, let them become really frozen, and then you just put them in a food processor, puree them, or you could do it in a high-speed blender. And if you have a hard time pureeing them because they're so frozen solid, you can also just let them thaw a little bit or add a splash of whatever milk you like into that machine, and you will end up with soft serve out of this world indulgent ice cream. And if you want to take it over the top, you can add a swirl of peanut butter inside. So peanut butter has that heart healthy fat. And I like to top it off with some dark chocolate chips. And then you have an ice cream feast, but there's no guilt. There's no regret. And that's just one idea. Another thing I love to do, I think you're going to like this one. I make a pumpkin pudding by taking a low-fat vanilla yogurt and a dollop of canned pumpkin puree. It's just, it's like the ooey gooey middle of a pumpkin pie. It's so delicious. I do a dash of cinnamon, maybe some nutmeg. And if I really want a party, I put on some toasted chopped pecans or walnuts on top. Yum, yum. But like, that's the idea. Figure out what you love and what you're craving. And I have a dessert for you. You could send me anything, whatever you're craving. I'm going to make it my mission to come back with something healthy for you.
You just made my day. I'm that snack guy. I'm a dessert guy. That is fantastic stuff. You know, as a dad, I have three kids and I now have six grandkids. When I talk to my kids, they're saying how they're having challenges with their kids in school, not going to school, limited in school. And they're all gaining weight as well. What do you recommend for the kids, the young kids that aren't getting their daily exercise, their daily nutrition? They're not eating the right stuff because they're just running around the house, grabbing every snack they can. What do you recommend parents do with the kids that are, they need their diet enhanced?
So the first thing I would say is out of sight, out of mind, right? We've heard that 100 times before, and it really makes a lot of sense from the food perspective. Go through your cabinets, go through your fridge and your freezer. And, you know, you don't have to get rid of all of the unhealthy items, but you really want to make sure that it's packed with smart foods that you feel really good about having your kids eat, because having it on hand is like 50% of the battle. The other thing is let fruits, a nice, gorgeous fruit bowl, play a starring role on your kitchen island or your kitchen counter, because your kids will see, you know, the apples, the oranges, the grapes, the pears, whatever it might be, the peaches and plums, because we're getting into that season now where fresh produce is so incredibly juicy and delicious. They will grab it. And when you open up the fridge, make sure you have things like sugar snap peas and baby carrots. Kids tend to like the sweeter vegetables. Bell peppers are fabulous. One bell pepper has more than twice the amount a vitamin C than an orange. And it has 200% of our daily value of vitamin C. And vitamin C is key for supporting a healthy immune system. So if you have cut up red, yellow, or orange bell peppers in there, that's fabulous. And don't forget about the dips. Kids love to dip. Adults love to dip too, right? Kids of all ages, 1 to 100. So I would say hummus and guacamole and salsa and hot sauce. You know, anything that's going to make your veggies a little bit more interesting is key here. And another thing that's great for kids when it comes to snacks, light popcorn. You can do all sorts of things with light popcorn. You can buy it plain or you can make it yourself. You buy the kernels, you can pop them in the microwave in a bowl or in a brown paper bag. And then what I do is I mist the top with a little bit of olive oil spray and I add Parmesan cheese or I add, you know, a little bit of, I have a spicy palate. So I'll add a little bit of sriracha sauce and maybe some cayenne and cumin. But you can take that popcorn into so many different personality directions. You know, it's just about planning, like sitting down, thinking about what your kids like. You know, you could still have some of the cookies and things like that in the house. You know, I'm a 90-10 food philosophy gal. 90% healthy foods, and then you have 10% wiggle room for some of the stuff that we just love just because. But that's what it boils down to with your kids too. You know, you talked about exercise. Get your kids outside. You know, so many of us, again, kids of all ages, 1 to 100, we are slumped on that couch as soon as we're, you know, off our virtual school or off virtual work. And we are binge watching, you know, all of our television shows and half the time we're gobbling through as well. So now that the weather is starting to warm up, take family walks outside. You know, if you have a basketball court locally or on your driveway, you know, play a game of horse, whatever you can do to get your kids moving. And I think a good rule of thumb is at least 30 minutes each and every day. It's that important. And the cool thing about exercise is it puts you in that positive mindset. So you already did one thing that's really good for your body and your health. Now you're going to follow through with smart food choices because you don't want to mucky it up. You know, you sort of have that euphoric high going.
Yep. Joy, I played professional football for 17 years. For 4 years, I played in college and 4 years in high school. So literally 25 years of my life I was an athlete. I was around medical people. As time has gone by, even in the NFL, where we have a great player care program, you sometimes slip. How often should I communicate with my doctor to have him either give me a physical or check my heart? How often should I be in touch with my doctor?
At least every 6 months. And I'm so glad that you brought this up because this might be one of the most single important points that we make here. I think what also happened with COVID and during this past year that we've been in isolation, people have been putting off their doctor appointments for fear of travel, for fear of cost issues. There are all sorts of obstacles. But everyone, you have to know where you stand because it's the only way that you could jump in with a game plan if, in fact, you find out that you do have some sort of a health condition. So I would say start now, make an appointment with your physician, and then let your physician guide you in terms of how soon after you should follow up. Look, if they find something wrong, if you have high cholesterol, if you have high blood pressure, if you have things that are concerning, they're going to want to follow up sooner rather than later. But like, hey, in the perfect world, you go and you get a great big high five, a pat on the back, and they say, we'll see you in a year, Ron.
Right,
that's
it.
That would be great news. But everybody needs to know their numbers. They need to know where they stand because we are our own most important and best advocates.
The one thing I begin to lack now is the body movement. I'm so glad you said get out there. And I you know, I love to play golf a lot. And I usually walk the golf course. Mm-hmm. I can get 6-7 miles in. Makes me tired and I get good rest. So how important is rest and how much rest should you get?
So we're finding that getting enough sleep is one of the main pillars to good health, right? We have eating a healthy diet, getting enough exercise, managing stress, that's a biggie, and getting enough sleep. And when it comes to sleep, the sweet spot for healthy people is 7 to 9 hours. And you really have to go out of your way to try to get that in, because it will help to balance your hormones. It helps to manage your weight. It helps with heart health. It really elevates every aspect of your health, both psychologically, emotionally, and physically.
How is 10 hours a night? That's kind of my target.
You know, if that's what your body needs, like that's what it's telling you. For some people, when it's over 9, they feel a little bit more groggy in the morning. But I think everybody's different. It's really like paying attention to how you feel. I would urge everybody not to get less than 7. And for people that have issues with trying to fall asleep, one of the great remedies is an hour or two before bed, try sipping a warm mug of chamomile tea. Chamomile tea has almost like sedative properties. It could help ease muscle tension. It's totally innocent, right? There's no sugar. There's no sodium. It's caffeine free. But you don't want to have it too close to bed, because I don't want you waking up to have to go to the bathroom. That could be a problem too.
So I should stay away from the beer is what you're telling me.
I think you should. That is
good advice. I better take that advice. All right. Now we're going to play a little bit of, we'll call it the Mythbusters. And I'm so glad I have someone of your knowledge and intelligence that could answer these Mythbusters correctly for our listening audience. Myth number one, heart disease always causes symptoms. So I don't know if I had it.
Busted. That Ooh. Is a big no. So there are so many risk factors that are silent. They do not cause any symptoms whatsoever. For example, it doesn't hurt when you have high cholesterol or when you have high blood pressure. And these are big risk factors. So that's why, again, you have to go to your physician and know your numbers and understand where you stand in terms of health.
So, and you're saying every 6 months, get to that doctor, make sure that doctor takes a look at you.
Make your appointment right now. Everybody, make an appointment right now, and then let your doctor guide you in terms of how often you should be coming in.
All right, Joy. Myth number two, lowering your cholesterol eliminates all cardiovascular risk.
Wrong. So having a normal cholesterol is only one piece of the puzzle. And it's great if you have a normal cholesterol. But what we know through lots of research, there are plenty of people with normal cholesterol, whether it's naturally normal or it's lowered because of a medication, that still have significant cardiac events. So just because you have a normal cholesterol, you're not off the hook. You still got to go to your doctor, and you still got to eat well and get out there and exercise and pay attention to your health.
Wow, that is just a great, great advice. Is there anything I left out? Any one big tip you want to give us before I let you go, Joy?
I think a great tip for everyone, especially now that we're getting into the warmer weather months, is to make sure that you stay hydrated. A great rule of thumb is to take your weight and divide it in half. And that's the amount of water ounces you should strive to drink every single day. And even more if you live in a hot climate or if you exercise a lot and you sweat. So for example, if you weigh 180 pounds, half of that is 90. So you aim to drink 90 ounces of water every single day. And it could be flat water, sparkling water, and even coffee and tea counts. And I know that that makes a lot of people happy. So on the days that you are walking that golf course, I would say you want to guzzle a little bit more than that, Ron. But I love the fact that you do so much walking. Like, I'm giving you a standing ovation.
Yeah, I accept. Thank you so much, Joy. I'll try to pick up the pace a little bit too. Get my rounds in a little quicker. Well, Joy, I can't thank you enough for joining us here on True to Your Heart podcast. You've enlightened not only me with this time you've given us, but you've enlightened our listening audience. So thank you so much for joining us here on the podcast. Good luck and be safe.
Thanks so much, Ron. I'm sending you a big virtual hug and kiss.
Right. I accept. Thank you. Thank you so much, Joy, for joining us today. And thank everyone out there for listening. For more information on how you can be true to your heart, visit www.truetoyourheart.com. I'm Ron Jaworski, and this has been True to Your Heart, presented by Amarin.